Hey mate, welcome to the Pineapple Express.
What's the Pineapple Express? This podcast?
No, the 10 days of deluge that we're about to get in this area.
Oh yeah, it is miserable, isn't it? I was barefoot in the garden for 5 days this week.
What?
I mean, I was working and stuff. That sounds bad. What I'm saying is, it was a t-shirt and, you know, socks off weather for 5 days.
Right.
California is brilliant, isn't it? I mean, it is.
/ schizophrenic.
No. I mean, we get winter for a few weeks is what it is. Like, you get basically October. We've talked about this. October starts getting a bit chilly. Then November is lovely and sunny again.
Yeah.
Then it snaps into super cold in December. Super cold. I mean, proportionate. We're not getting snow here.
And we're a long sleeve shirt.
It rains for a few weeks in January. We go, oh God, when's this going to stop? Sunshine for a week. Suddenly I'm back to like, it feels like spring. I better get super fit again. It's so, and then now it's going to rain for a week. We're going to have terrible storms. Blah, my basement's probably going to flood, etc.
You're going to have to dig another trench.
Isn't it brilliant?
My
mood is so dependent on the weather. I realize, like my whole outlook on life, where it was like hernia, needed surgery, was putting on a few pounds, really feeling bad about myself. 5 days of nice weather, back in the cold plunge again in the mornings, back to the routine. Let's get into summer mode. Where's the beach bod? You know what I mean? In a few days, it's raining again. It's like, oh, okay, it's going to be like,
back to soups and stodgy. You've cracked the blue zone key. That's it. Just get some sun and you'll be happy.
Sunshine. Job done.
Yeah. I used to have a friend who used to have a belief. He was an Australian. He moved to London and he was like, you're lazy if you can't work out how to entertain yourself in cold climates like England. You're not really civilized. It's lazy just to go to sunny places and just have a nice life. That's not how it works. You're meant to go to places that are difficult to just hang out in and create civilization. And his theory was that's how you're meant to be.
He's not right, though, is he? Yeah. I mean, it's a good soundbite.
As someone who's fled, as a refugee of said civilization.
Well, I will tell you, I think a lot of it revolves around boozing. Like when there's not much to do, like when it gets, you know, I'm a bit like when it gets cold out, or at least I've changed a bit, but when it gets cold out, I'd love to, you know, have a pint in front of the fire or get a hot toddy or something like
that. Just hibernate.
When it's sunny out, I'd love to get a pint of Bulmers, in the sunshine and so that. Like my initial instinct is to just like, where are we going to booze? Like, oh, it's freezing. Let's get a nice fireplace and go inside. It's lovely out. Let's get a nice drink and sit out. And you know what I mean? I think when you live in a nice climate like California, I don't need to booze at all anymore. I actually don't miss it at all. And it's, I think it's partly because like, I don't know, that's not here. And so I think,
health. Also generational. You're a very youthful person. Well, and the kids don't drink anymore, do
young
they?
Young at heart.
All the alcohol sales gone. Everything's collapsed, you know?
Yeah. Drinking's down across the board in Europe. One of the lads sent me a graph. Well, not across the board, but, you know, two-thirds down in some countries and it's increased in others, obviously. But, like, I think it's interesting. It's an interesting trend. You know,
really,
the younger generation, certainly in the US here, people just don't booze the way we did. Or did. You were into politics and trying to be smart when you were in college. So
the way you did.
Look where that got you.
Into my garage on a soggy Wednesday night. Good to see you, mate. Hey, listen, this is notionally the third time we've chatted. The third episode. We TBD whether it's actually the third or the first episode we publish of the year. We do have two others spooled up. But promise you guys, I've been starting to get texts during the week going, so what's up with the potty, mate?
So you can edit the first one still. We're still waiting for you to edit. You've edited the second one, and I have to review it just because there was some sensitive stuff in it that I wanted to have a little look at.
It's fine. It's fine.
But
it's
the first one. The first one needs an edit. You can stick that up as soon as it's done. Yeah. I don't need to see it. Yeah,
I'll definitely stick it up somewhere. I guess, should the first one not go out? Here's how I summarize January. 2024, I will summarize as the following.
Yeah.
Marcus bought an old haunted barracks by the River Shannon on a whim. He's coming to 2024 with a core resolution around finance, personal finance, layering on top of fitness. That may or may not be working. One of the core tenets of his finance is spending restrictions, which
huge.
Require him to delete Amazon for the entire year and post anything on the fridge for 2 weeks. If you still want to buy it, then you have to buy it after that. Also, any major decisions require a lot of tension and stress. Insert MacBook discussion. Further, there are loopholes to this where through your YouTube affiliations and sponsorships, you're able to reach out and still satisfy your stuff urging. So instead of buying, you just ask for stuff, which...
Yeah.
Fine.
Free stuff is allowed.
It's a great loophole. It's really well done. You've exercised your financial...
I'm not spending money.
It's great. You've done this thing. That's there. Fitness is back on track. We're eating well.
Not back on track.
You've quit your drumming. Short-lived career as a drummer. Come and went. Gone. And then you're about to gallivant pretty much every second week across the US and international for the rest of the year. Is that an accurate summary of what's happened in 2024 so far?
Quite damning. I'm not ready to do a summary around me.
No,
because it just seems very faddy.
For January.
It seems very faddy. It's like, what's Marcus's latest fad? This week, Marcus is...
No, this year, this quarter. Yeah. And during this time, I stumbled across, maybe because your feed started infiltrating my feeds, the phenomenon known as loud... What was it called?
Loud what?
Loud budgeting. The trend is not just to like be thrifty anymore, but you have to be loud about it and tell everybody. And I said it to you instantly, thinking, this is written about you, isn't it?
It's not real, though. If you look at that site, that's just, I don't know, you must have been searching for something, because that was on creativemoms.com or something. It was some weird, it's not mainstream. It's not like a TikTok trend that people are talking about their budget.
We support all moms, creative or otherwise, on this podcast, just to be clear.
I basically came out in this podcast as having a problem last year, and now I'm getting it rammed in my face for trying to fix it. Like, I mean, I'm not going to have that.
you did come out. That was a bit of a moment, wasn't it? It was very great vulnerability. Great vulnerability.
Yeah, I was spending too much money on Amazon. It was getting out of control, so fixed it. Now it's fixed. Now I'm done. I haven't spent any money on Amazon this year. Yeah. So,
also, we got Marcus's abridged 7-point plan for financial security in 2024 as an American citizen. Which requires things like backdoors. But look, that's a detail. And should you ever
get that episode out? Yeah. There was some of that advice was some real nuggets.
Should you ever get a bootleg version of that episode, you'll get that advice for you rather.
Rami is editing these, so we might not get any of these. Let's be honest. I did the first 2 years of the podcast, and none of these might go live.
It's actually just for my personal pleasure. I'm now downloading them and just listen to them by myself in the evenings.
That suits me. This is all about. All I want to do is have a call with my buddy Rami on a Wednesday, and if we don't have a podcast, we won't make it happen. So I'm meeting my goals. So if it goes live or not is arbitrary.
Am I on your resolutions list for 2024?
No, but you were when we started this podcast. You were my number one goal was to talk to people, my mates more.
But that's like a restaurant saying best pizza restaurant 2019 when it's like now 2024. Am I on the goals for this year? It's still on your goals.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. See, Rami is a big deal for me. You play a big part in my life. You do. You do. You come up very often in my house with my kids.
That's very sweet. Your kids are...
Everybody knows you are.
Next level. Your kiddo singing the best rock anthems from the 80s, 70s
full blast
and 80s.
On the front porch while your kids are sleeping in the car.
I'd say coma. I'd say past that drug. Oxygen-deprived coma in the back of the car.
No, that dog setting you have in the Tesla is handy when you get the two kiddos sleeping in it so no one breaks the window. Dogs are okay. The air conditioning's on. That just happens to be two children.
Look, when you have a birthday party, I hope they don't hear this. When you have a birthday party at the zoo that starts at 10 a.m., you expect it to finish at, I don't know, 12 or 1, sometime around nap time. For me to be leaving at 3:30 and the party to still be going. For cupcakes to only be delivered at 2, 4 hours after we got there. You can't
outrageous.
Be having...
Outrageous. Surely. Yeah. But okay, fine.
It was fantastic, and I loved it. Yeah. All for the whole day hanging. It was amazing. I just wasn't expecting it, so when I was giving you the... I need to work out my nap plans. My nap plans went out the window, didn't they? They were a disaster. Anyway.
Nap was not ideal. I think a little bit of forward planning could have predicted that you would not be hanging out with me and my kids. But it's okay. I am not a forward planner either. I've got a question. Speaking of your kids napping in your Tesla... Segue. Who's got two thumbs and going for a joyride on Saturday in a Cybertruck?
Oh, look at this guy.
Yes.
Excellent.
I've snagged myself
a Cybertruck supplier.
A mate of mine from the NBA. You wouldn't know him. Just happened to be in your NBA as well. You wouldn't remember him. Okay. I don't want to name him, but he's not a listener to this podcast, but he's a long-time follower of my YouTube channel. And he reached out to me and said, I've got a Cybertruck this Saturday for the day. Would you like to come? And I was like, can I film it? And he said, bonus, let's do it.
It's
Francis Wong. Remember Francis?
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to hang out on Saturday, go for a spin, go up to Grizzly Peaks up in the Berkeley Hills, take some videos, and yeah, it's
going to
be fun.
You are going to leak your YouTube into the Tesla world. And it's gonna. Your channel is not gonna know what hit it. Once you're in the Teslarati ecosystem, you are sucked in.
There's gonna be a single video. This will be it.
You'll be sucked in massively. You're gonna get the haters and the lovers.
You're done.
And you're gonna be polarized. And you're gonna be maggering. All the red pilled.
Already got that with the Meta Ray-Bans. People hate those things. People hate that company. There is no coming back for Meta. Having just put a video up, it did really well. It got like 700K views. With an addition, with 500,000 comments about people hating Meta.
Poor bastards.
Like, wow.
It's been like that for a while, but poor bastards.
Appalling. Anyway, happening on Saturday. Do you know what else is happening that we don't know about?
Oh.
A reunion. The NBA reunion of 2015. NBA 2014. That crowd is in April. And Francis is like, you coming to the reunion? I'm like, Yeah. Of course I was invited to that.
It's the wrong year. We're reunion on 15.
We're 15, but they hung out together and everyone got invited and we didn't get invited. So, well, I'm going to go now, 100%. Yeah.
I look forward. You've got to rock up in your own truck. But... I am very, very, very glad we're having this conversation because one of those topics that come up and I want to understand it in detail, but I just can't be bothered. And I just kept on thinking during the week, I'll just ask Marcus. Marcus can explain this. For sure he's read it. He's going to have a beautiful, like, seventh grade teacher style description that both the audience and I are going to be able to follow. I'll be able to quiz him.
When Apple, two people love each other. Not that one. Different. Not that one. The
Apple,
other one.
Apple and Europe.
Apple.
Europe and Apple sideloading App Store,
as the
something,
European
something.
European on the call. Do you know everything about this? Yeah, okay.
No, as
please
a person
tell
who,
me what Europe wants.
That's right. That's it. It got too fuzzy. Then Elk got involved from Spotify and people have. There's calculators on the line. I just don't.
Yeah.
Can you help us understand what the dick is? Because Apple are right now is. But this show is going to be just about Apple. Let's be clear. The dark side and the light side
of the
Apple
episode. Okay.
Yeah, it's going to be yet another
episode.
There's
also some Elon stuff. But anyway,
There's great Elon. So we'll definitely do some Neuralink action.
Okay.
I just feel like the dark side of Apple in this last. Sentiment-wise, I would say 10x worse than Microsoft at its peak of badness in terms of being
sharded. You are framing this hard.
No,
okay, I will frame it. Yeah. I will take the Apple perspective in this. How about that? And I will I will say the things in the way Apple say them, and let our audience decide.
That sounds very, very, very fair. How about just let's understand what the dickens happened? Let's go.
Yeah.
Shoot.
So apparently Europe has an issue. With a single market, apparently the App Store is anti-competitive.
They just don't like monopolies, do they, Europe? What's with them? What is
apparently,
their up
well,
their cracker?
You're assuming it's a monopoly, and I'm saying the App Store is apparently a monopoly, and they're insisting with their DMA, what is it, the Digital Marketing, whatever it is, this new legislation act, Digital Marketing Act that came into play. They're insisting on there being more choices, pro-choice for European Apple users, which means that in order to comply, in order to be able to continue to sell software in the EU, so that's important. Like, England's not part of the EU,
China's not part of the EU. just we're on the same page.
Within
Australia
the EU,
is not part of the EU.
They need to offer their customers choice in terms of they could buy the apps on the App Store, or they could buy them on a different App Store. Now, there are some caveats in terms of it's not just any app store. In order to be an app store, you need to be able to take a line. You know, Apple has created some simple guidelines to follow for anyone who wants to create an app store. So it's not so that it's not just going to be open source. It's not just going to be the Marcus and Rami app store. There's going to be millions of them. there's some guidelines. And the guidelines are along the lines of, you have to be able to take $1 million in credit. You have to be able to open a line of $1 million in credit as a minimum. So they have to be reasonable sized app stores. The apps that are sold in the app stores have to be identical to the apps that are sold on the Apple App Store, so that there's no way of there being any advantage to using the App Store. There does need to be, in order for it to be a true non-monopoly, it needs to have different possible payment methods. And so you can use other cards instead of just paying Apple famously takes a 30% commission on all sales. But there has to be other ways of paying. Imagine this other alternative app store has a different way of paying. And Apple is totally okay with that. And they've said, listen, this is great. We'll obviously take 17% of the payment from that app store, but you can use any card you want. 17%.
Obviously.
So the analogy here is, you don't want to get your coffee at Pete's. So you don't want to buy your coffee from Apple. So you're going to buy your coffee from Starbucks. And Apple is totally okay with that. And Tim Cook will come to your table. Once you've bought your coffee from Starbucks and charge you take 17% sips of your coffee. And so then you've a choice. Do you want to buy it from Apple directly or go to Starbucks and Tim will take a few sips out of it? And that's super, yeah.
And backwash. A little bit of backwash.
And people are reacting, you know, badly to what is essentially Apple trying to remove risk for the people in the EU, which is like
for consumers,
because someone could put up a bad app.
Yeah.
If they did a slightly different Spotify app, that could be a bad experience.
Yeah.
Or something bad could happen. So they want to de-risk that by making sure the apps are all the same across the board.
So, okay. Can I just make sure I'm following?
Basically,
the EU put up a legislation.
Yes.
And Apple
goes into effect in March. It has to happen by March. Yeah.
And it's been coming along for a long time. Bits of it have been dragging for a long time in different sections. And like Google's been responding for 7 years. All this, but this particular one around the app stores and choice, and Apple responded and said, Here's a proposal.
We've read your legislation. We think it's very risky. There's lots of risks here.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think they said risk. I think they used the word risk 17 times in their cover letter.
More than AI.
It's like basically the biggest, riskiest thing the EU's ever done is to ask Apple to create a different,
allow others to download their apps
in different ways. Yes.
Risk merchants. So this is their response to the legislation that they believe is within the legislative guidelines.
Yeah.
So, like, part of this, if anyone has issues with their proposal, part of it is on the legislators. You guys didn't close enough loopholes. You weren't clear enough. You were too ambiguous. You kind of left it open. If this complies, it's kind of on the EU. So the question first is, like in my mind, there's this, hang on, you set up a framework, you set up the rule, someone responded, you can't be whinging without going back to the rule maker, is one chat. But just to be clear on the kind of initial, the rules where you have to allow for other app stores on your devices and your software.
Other payment methods is the high level.
And
actually, it was kind of assumed you could do side loading.
Right.
I mean, the end state would be, the ideal state would be you can use any credit card on any, side loading is where you go to a website and download something directly, like Photoshop. So if you wanted to get Photoshop, you go to the Adobe website and you just download Photoshop and you would pay on the Photoshop website, and then there's like no app store now, like that's side loading, which is readily available on Android and is kind of commonly used. But like, is there so much big risk written next to that from Apple? That is the riskiest thing. Let's not do that at all. Okay, let's have other app stores that meet certain criteria. I think that's the key to it.
I mentioned privacy. So okay, fine. So they've gone, here's our response to it, and our response is really considering a risk, and we also
looking
still need to monetize
consumer.
Because this is still using our software and our hardware, so we should still be compensated for this thing.
To the tune of 17%, which is like the minimum.
Which is amazing.
There is also a 50 cent charge. There's something
per
around
install.
The lines. Per install, there's a 50 cent charge per install, which is kind of peanuts in terms of like if EA, who is one of the people who's suing Apple, I think it would be the tune if they download numbers, they would owe Apple maybe $500,000. Not a big sum of money, but it's like, you know,
That's not the story that a lot of the developers were going with. So that's my understanding. But they've actually said, sure. You can have this alternative app stores, but here's our pricing and here's our rules. Here's going to be our requirements around that. And the pricing alone basically was painted by a bunch of developers as worse than the 30%. because under certain conditions, if your app is free and you've got 200 million users and you're monetizing in other ways, or you're ad driven or whatever your ecosystem is, you're essentially saying you can't grow, you can't have installs, you're going to cap me up the front of the knees, and you're going to add the 17%. And actually, Apple gave everyone a calculator, online calculator that said, put in your numbers and you'll see, you can choose. Do you want to go on this alternative app store? Right? And lo and behold, most people, as they entered it in, just said, I'll just stick with the 30%.
Maybe we'll stay here. Thanks for the choice, Apple.
So there's been this real Machiavellian play where they've gone, I hear your legislation, here's our response to it, it fits within your guidelines, and here's our pricing, and we're going to make it less interesting and less enticing for our developers to go there than here. And somehow that legislation was like allowed to go through. And I think that's the crux of it, surely. Like, I don't know how much you can demonize Apple, but like, well, they're working within rules.
Here's a calculation.
Yeah.
EA, if they go through this, will have to pay, just in terms of downloads, €500,000 a year. And Apple is currently suing EA for $72 million. So, you do the math on that. It's more attractive for EA to pay the $500, you know, or do they, or do they just, you know, stop?
In Apple's defense, I think a lot of folks at the moment don't remember what it was like in the 90s when you go online and the risk associated with just randomly installing the tightness, the closed silo strictness of the iOS ecosystem is a huge benefit to technology in general. It allowed mom and pop to safely download stuff and move on, and the offspring not have to go there and kind of get Norton antivirus and delete stuff and do tech support. It allowed for the mainstream of tech because it was so clean. So there's clearly value there, and there's clearly value in distribution.
In the business you're in, payment security is real. Like, as in, like, absolutely. You know, they do have this horrible UI they put up. If you're going to put in another payment method besides their own, instead of using Apple's infrastructure, there's a full page. I don't know if you've seen the screenshot.
The text became a meme.
Talks about how much risk, and it's like, it's just like, it's basically, careful now, you're just you're putting your credit card details basically for everyone to see on the internet if it's not our infrastructure.
You're about to get robbed. Just FYI, he's there's the allow tracking, the ATT thing that was happening where it says do not allow, but it's just like the screw Mark Zuckerberg. And now they've gone for like full screen takeover with a lot of copy.
It is literally full screen phone. Yeah. Full screen phone. Yeah. This is dangerous.
Yeah, yeah. Are you sure? Are you double sure? Yeah, stay on our app store, mate.
But some of it's true. I mean, like, as in, like, you know, some of them are super secure payment methods, and it's just as secure, if not more secure. But, you know, there, as you said, there is the Wild West. So you do want to.
It's very possible to.
That's the EU. So where we are with it is Apple has responded. So EU set some legislation in place. Apple has said, here's our proposal. We have. Not only have we met your guidelines, we've done it in a very thin...
Secure.
We've just... Very secure, removed all the risk, / barely met every single criteria way. And it's up to the EU to respond and say, does this actually meet? And it's the first test of this, like, this act or this new legislation to say, you know, is this what we're talking about? It's weird because in order to even have an app store,
you have to apply to
Apple...
Monopoly law, antitrust stuff, and the difference between US and Europe, and the idea that Europe is the kind of de facto regulator, de facto regulator of the world, and the US kind of lets innovation flourish and then someone else kind of curbs it. But also, you know, like explicit monopoly laws in the US, antitrust are price only. They're explicitly price. And if price goes, it's you know, back to Rockefeller and trains and monopolies creating price gouging. Anything that takes the price down, like Google and Apple and all the marketplaces, it's good. It's not considered antitrust, whereas Europe has other considerations around what antitrust is. And I think that's such a funny thing to be able to reconcile as a global company, to have two fundamentally different systems running. You know,
I like that Europe is whingy and keeps tech on its toes. You know, I mean, and it's probably too whingy and too conservative, but like we need that to counter the whole capitalism rules everything. You know, like I think it is good to have some sort of
It's nice. It's
nagger.
Nice.
You know,
it's a bureaucrat thing to do something. I think what happens, it's like in the extreme maturity of things, you know.
Yeah.
The App Store is not new. It's been around for a while.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Industries
wait,
have been
wait
formed.
A minute. This has become a monopoly since 2009.
That's right. So it's extreme lag. It's the classic kind of technology leads all legal story. And I think, you know, Europe lags any sort of regulation. But they've certainly, the scale of it meant that everyone had to kind
did
of start cracking.
Did this DMA come out of Dublin? Was this an Irish thing as well? I just assume all of this like is Irish-led. I mean, I'm sure it's Brussels, but I'm going to put it, I'm just going to guess it was someone from Ireland. Ireland.
There's another Irish kind of pulling up the ladder situation. Tax breaks creates the entire tech industry of US companies in Ireland based on extreme tax breaks. And then once you're done, once you've got your profits coffered up and cream filtered, you just go, actually, we're just going to pull the ladder up and make sure regulation doesn't let anyone else to do that. If we could just...
I disagree. Strongly disagree. I unsubscribe. Yeah. disagree with you, Rami.
What? Tell me why.
Just because... Ireland, I'm just not having my country characterized as that. That's just a very...
it's not your country, it's your bureaucrats. We can separate the people from their leaders, right?
No, not in Ireland.
Not here, not now.
Yeah, it's too small. It's a family business. Yeah. somebody knows. I know somebody who's doing it, so I can't say it. Yeah.
Basically, everyone is the person. Everyone is related to the people. Yeah, not with a huge slight. I'm sure it's relatively unrelated, but... For what it's worth.
I think Apple's seen whiplash on this in more than one way as well. I think something's happening. I wonder what's happening, but I do think that there's a global ganging up on Apple. I think we're going to talk about it, but the Vision Pro, the announcements of the lack of supported apps is interesting.
Yeah.
YouTube doesn't work on Vision Pro, nor does Google have a plan to create an app for it. Netflix doesn't work on Vision Pro, nor does it have a plan to create an app. They have apps for the iPhone, and I bet Google and Netflix get a ton of their viewing from Apple TV, iPhone, laptops, etc. But they've strategically decided, because guess what, it's not that hard.
How strategic it is. Oh, but let's. Yeah.
You think it's because they're resource constrained?
Yeah.
It's like, if we had a spare Scrum team, we would have made. It's not hard to work on Vision OS, Remy. To create an app to work. If you have a mobile app already, to convert it to a Vision OS app.
It's half a day compile.
It's a Scrum team for a few weeks.
Yeah.
One Scrum team for not a quarter.
Yeah.
So you're telling me Google doesn't? Yeah. Well, we would have done it. I mean, we didn't. First of all, we didn't know the Vision Pro would be a big thing. You'll have to give us a chance to catch up. And it's going to be a Scrum team for a quarter, so we're probably, give us some time. No,
I mean,
come on.
Like when it came to Watch or iPad, you know, these were part of the ecosystem that would never get prioritized and would lag product development by 2-3 years sometimes. In the case of Watch, you know, it took...
It's different.
Right. So I guess all I'm saying is that there are definitely arguments to talk about resource and how many people use it and like the value of developing through an ecosystem.
When someone creates the next where the obvious use case, the first use case and the only...
Entertainment consumption. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
The first thing everyone wants to do is put it on and watch a video. So like, if you can't watch a video on it, what's the point?
But going back to your point about, is there a I fully agree. I think there's a real sentiment backlash brewing. And this is my opener, like vis-a-vis Microsoft way back in the day.
Yeah.
To where the second, and you know, this has been brewing with Epic Games and the whole story, you know, Fortnite, the second there's an alternative, the second there's a chance to stab them in the back, I feel like, everyone's going to go for it, whatever that looks like.
Well, they're the incumbent, right? They're the incumbent, so it's like,
Well, they are, but there's also ways of doing it that keeps people on side, kind of, you know, over time, and they have not managed that, I would say.
I just wonder how much of it is just the 30% cut. Is this like Netflix and YouTube just being like, come on?
But I mean, Amazon negotiated with them, right? Amazon Prime went set up a contract and said, we're going to let people, I want to rent my movie, my latest, you know, Christmas Mums 4 edition for $3.99, and I want to rent it on my iPad. I don't want to go to the website.
Yeah.
And they cut a deal for a lot less than 30%.
But it was janky for a long time.
It was annoying, yeah.
Like, it's not supported on this device. Go and buy it on your computer, and then you can watch it on your phone.
You still can't get Kindle. Can't get Kindle on the like.
I
still,
think you can now. I think you can now. I can buy stuff on my device now. I think they fixed that.
They did a deal. Anyway, thank you for taking me through the Apple.
Yeah, Europe. Apple anything story. Else, Europe? Because I know everything about it. Yeah.
Yes. Potatoes. Tell me more about potatoes. Like that.
The famine.
Also, deflation. I'd like to understand deflation.
It's the opposite of inflation. It's next question.
density, housing density. That seems to be a concept specific to Europe. Is that
the fact that we have populated, highly populated cities, unlike San Francisco, with our 30% occupancy? No, most cities they tend to have a housing deficiency. They have more people than houses, but not here.
We joke about kind of the laggard, not joke, but kind of there is, you know, lead lag, and I think. I feel like there's a lot of innovation that comes out of Europe that's not necessarily what we consider tech-based innovation, but, you know, social policy, public goods, things, environmental direction. You know, there's huge innovation that comes out that we kind of talk about in different ways. Yeah. And I think that it's just a different way of operating, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with you. Yeah, but tech's better. Yeah.
But tech's way more fun. So, so the other Apple, so the light side. Dark side was the EU story. The light side is, Wednesday night now, Friday, the 2nd of February, the Vision Pro is out. So pre-orders went out a week and a half ago. 2nd of February, they start shipping and there's going to be in-store demonstrations and the whole thing. And they've done these classic Apple beautiful marketing drips and draps of influencers and key kind of reviews and so on. So on Tuesday, all the embargoes lifted.
Yeah.
And all of the unchoreographed, unscripted reviews deluged us. In all sorts of emotions. Tell me what that felt like on Tuesday when you started opening
up
your phone.
The embargo lifted, but they were still placed devices.
Placed devices, but embargo meaning you gave it to whoever you wanted to give it to, and then they could report on all at the same time. So
I think there's an overwhelming... So folks can... Yeah, just to be explicit, I know you just explained it, but people can buy the device and it won't have arrived yet. They've pre-ordered it and it arrives in 3 days.
At this point, it won't arrive because the first batch went out, so it won't arrive until March now. What does it say?
The third, the first batch comes out on Friday the 2nd.
But right now, if you order, when's the arrival time?
If you order now. So it's I'm saying the first round of orders came in.
Yeah.
And for those people, even if you were the fastest to click and ordered that second, you will not get it till this Friday.
Yeah.
And then they had a bunch of tech reviewers and they kind of let them see it three times. Everyone's seen it three times. MKBHD and iJustine and all those folks in The Verge have all had it on they've tried it three different times. And this time they've been given their devices last week and they've had an embargo, as you said, where they could go live. And they all went live at just after midnight. And there was a plethora of unboxings and first impressions, etc. The initial ones, I felt like all the ones I watched first were all positive, overwhelmingly positive. And then there was a couple of almost like cliched negative, like as in everyone, there's going to be so much positivity, I want to put up a negative one kind of thing.
Like two-sidedism. There was almost that we have to show the other side.
Clickbaity, like as in this thing's, you know, it's just never going to work and here's all the problems with it. And you're like, yeah, but so binge watched everything. So same as yourself. What do you want to talk about?
I want to know your feeling based on this.
It's a fantastic first gen product. I think there's a lot of tech YouTubers who bought it who will just be returning it. They just bought it to review it.
To get the
I'm
video.
I'm not sure. I have no sense of how big this market is. I suspect it's... I know they sold out 80,000 units in the first batch, and that was 10x more than I thought they would. So, like, I have no idea how big this market is. For a $3,500 device, I think it's a huge market for the $1,500 device. So I think it is all just influencers and incredibly early adopters who want a Gen 1 device. It's definitely not ready for market. That's my take, but it's super exciting.
Not ready for market from a price point of view or from a
functionality point of view. There's no, we, like we talked about, the other episodes may never go live. There's no apps. It has very limited capabilities. A lot of things suck on it. Like if you've seen FaceTime, have you seen the avatars? They look like melted wax, 2D, cloudy,
slightly blurry, dreamy.
Yeah, they look like they were maybe shot with a 2000s phone, and it was of a, I don't know, it's very unique. It's like, it borderlines uncanny, but then it's like totally fake as well. It's just really, it's weird. I don't like the avatars for FaceTime calls.
And yet the best, first of all, we haven't seen them in 3D. We've only seen them on a 2D ourselves.
Yeah.
Right. And yet the best avatar recreation we see in the industry, like across the board.
Oh, yeah, undoubtedly. Yeah. I mean, arguably not as good as the Lex. Like, so here's where I'm at. These are the true avatars, the ones you take by just using the device itself. How you get your avatar is you take the Vision Pro or whatever it's called. You turn it back to you. There's a bunch of cameras on it, and you kind of move it around your face, move your head like you do with Face ID and a phone, and it takes photos of your face. And then you put it on, and then when you're on a call, it monitors where your hands are, so you can do hand gestures on these calls, and it rasters it, it sends images of you to these other people. And it tracks your eyes, so you can see if you're looking left or right. It knows, like, if you're on a call where there's people on your left or right, if you turn to face the people on your right, the people on your left can't see your face or your hands anymore. Like, it's really contextually aware of where you are and all that. Super cool. And it looks terrible. The
terrible is strong. That is a strong. Eyes strong.
I'm
too
disappointed
strong.
Because the Lex Friedman and
the Meta
Mark
one.
Zuckerberg one, the Meta interview they did where they did a podcast in the same room was so much better. But the way they did that was that they had to go into a room
and take full scan
and take 3,600 photos of themselves.
Yeah,
in different, 360 with and it took like a month to compile and all that stuff, and then it worked seamlessly.
Right. Right.
But that was a much better experience. Like, I actually can't see. It's not good enough for it to be a phone call. Like, it wouldn't be a good enough in a work context. Like, if I joined a work call and I was like, hey, it's Marcus, and it'd be super, very uncomfortable for other people.
I wonder. Because the reviews I was saying were there by the third or fourth time they're in there, they were getting A, much more comfortable with it, and B, way more impressed by it the longer they did it in FaceTime. And I think there has to be an
like
element,
like
an adjustment element.
Yeah, it feels like you're with the person. Like, it does. Yeah. It does feel like you're with the person. Yeah. Like when, but it also feels like you're with the person when it was just you and me playing Pong tennis, and I couldn't see any of you. I could just see where your paddle was and where your head was. That felt like I was in a room with you during COVID when I couldn't leave my house. It's like, I'm with Rami now. We're playing table tennis.
100%. I think it's a significant evolution of that, and it's not yet at the research grade stuff like Google Starlight or the Meta avatar story, but. As the most advanced consumer commercial, and I think the disconnect here is that it's not meant to be consumer; it's meant to be work. So, as you say, there's a bit of a kind of impedance mismatch, but it can only get better with whatever computation, photography, etc. And the sense I get is, as it is, it's already not uncanny, but pretty impressive
in 3D. If you and I were on this podcast doing it, I'm sure it would feel amazing.
Right.
But it still looks crap. It does.
I just think that's such a nit. Like, it's the tiniest. It's how many FaceTime calls do you do a day? How many FaceTime calls are you going to do in the middle of this thing?
I mean,
other than work.
Yeah. Other than work?
Yeah.
A couple of weeks. One a week, two a week.
Like, it's one feature of many. I'm not sure it's meant to be the killer feature, and I feel like it's a nit given you're going to get used to it and
it's
kind
of deal
with it.
It's one of the only things they have right now.
From my point of view, the maturity of the system, the SDKs, the environments, the ecosystem is the most mature first time launch of any Apple product ever. Not just comparing to the first iPhone, which had nothing, no app store, no SDKs and no setup, but just it's the most advanced first gen product period. Admittedly,
sure about that.
I mean, the SDK alone, it's the cleanest. To your point, it takes a handful of weeks and you've spun up the most advanced app over, and people are spitting apps out. Like, at a clip now already, you're seeing them all submitting, and the app review process is incredibly fast. And it's really rich, like the fidelity, the stuff they've done in the background, things that no one's talking about, the exact innovations they've done, like the boundary setting. You don't have to do boundary or do any room setup like you do with Quest and everyone else.
Pass-through is fantastic. Apparently,
they
made 12 milliseconds latency on it, which means it doesn't drop. By the time you viewed one frame, it's already rendered the next frame. So, like, you're not...
No one's talking about nausea. No one's talking about the stuff that, you know, you have all the classics. I feel like they've cleaned up so much of the stuff that...
The hardware is there. I don't know. Let me see. Here's where my head is going.
Mm.
When the Apple Watch first came out, the killer feature was you could put two fingers on the Apple Watch face and send someone your heartbeat, someone else who had an Apple Watch, and that was like, okay, cool.
Cute.
But that's not even on this anymore. I remember when the iPhone first came out, Gen 1, there was like a bunch of features like where. Because it had a gyroscope, if you tipped it sideways, you could make it look like you were drinking a liquid, or you know those kind of things. Or
the bump was exactly.
Yeah. So none of that stuff exists anymore. I just wonder the FaceTime. Like, I don't know. It just seems too. I just even think. I don't know. I can't imagine getting on a call, putting one of these on one of my kids, getting on a call with my parents and putting them on. I think it's not good enough for that. Like, It's kind of scary.
Let's see,
really.
I'm willing to bet. I mean, it depends on the face and the person. How, like, some people get rendered better than others, but I'm willing
to bet.
Some
of them
are
hilarious. Yeah, some of them are hilarious.
Just awful.
Can we at least agree that the front screen, what do they call the front LED screen? At least that's going away. That's called. Going to be gone, right? Okay. They're not going to have that on Gen 2, are they?
So I think FaceTime, I think within 5 minutes, you get used to it, and they're just going to improve and improve and improve. I think it's here to stay. The thing at the front that shows your eyes so people around you feel like you're there, I mean, just replace it with googly eyes and be done with it. Just
it
put
makes
a
you
sticker
look so
on the front.
Special. It makes every rendering I've seen makes someone look absolutely special.
Which, again, the 2D-ness, I think, is a problem. So we need to see in 3D. We need to see it animate and get the feeling for it. And their intent, I think, is really solid. I think it's really solid. But the biggest issue...
Their intent is that we can't do this with just glasses yet, so we're going to do this massive compromise. Well,
no.
I don't know.
No. The intent is this is a VR headset with pass-through, and there's fundamental problems with it. We're going to tackle them. The two things. One is clearly the look of the person, because it offsets, and it's going to be with my bridge and my nose. It's going to be halfway up my forehead.
Yeah, exactly.
My eyes are going to be there, and it just looks... It's just not a good look.
Yeah.
And the second thing is the trade-off here. The trade-off is they put a lenticular lens on the very front of this thing that is already heavy and dense and incredible.
Yeah.
They clearly added weight because of this feature.
Yeah. And it's glass. Yeah.
And at some point they're going to go, not worth it. Like, the biggest complaint has been the weight. And as soon as you put the strap on the top of your head, you're good to go. I think that's the other key flaw. They went for aesthetic a bit too far. They went over form rather than function. All the learning from all the other headsets, the VR Elite strap that's in Quest and so on, is all about put some battery in the back of the head, get just equal distribution, and put a top strap for the love of God on the head so you're getting a really nice weight balance.
Yeah.
The premium shots out of the box strap has none of that. No battery on the back and none of the head strap, and you can't be leading with that, because that got the initial round of negative. It's heavy. Just find a much more like aesthetic looking one that's a known fixed problem. That was I feel like that was really rookie. That was too designer-led rather than, come on, you're obviously going to put the next strap on.
No, you want that from Apple. It's a Gen 1 device. You want it to be lofty and beautiful and round. And like, it's Apple.
I do, but you just got shot in the foot, because the first response from MKDB was, it gets heavier every time I put it on. Now, they were in the first three tests before he got it himself, and he managed to put this crappy Velcro thing on the top of his head. And he's like, now it's great. It's super comfortable. Just find a way to make that happen in the first instance. Rather, I don't know.
Yeah.
I found that a bit.
I agree with that. Yeah. The unboxing experience was phenomenal, I have to say. I thought it was like, you know, I don't know why. Did Apple invent unboxing?
Surely.
I mean,
7-year-olds on YouTube invented unboxing for toys, but the actual packaging experience that we see today,
unboxing, taking the thing you bought out of the package is part of the experience. 100%. Like, is that an Apple 100%, thing?
100% Apple thing. 100% Steve Jobs talked about it like as a religious thing, as a key part of the
value
proposition.
I mean, it's
like
so common now that it's like, here's the unboxing for this thing, but like, they got this right.
The way the packaging...
It looks really nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that it's just sitting there. It's not tied down. You don't have to cut anything.
Yeah.
It's just firm, and you just lift it, and it's just...
Yeah, yeah.
And you do that thing.
It has the right suction on everything.
Yeah, yeah.
Yet some more proprietary connectors for the field. Now they've got essentially like a Lightning Maxi.
But they're not calling it MagSafe. Not MagSafe, MagSafe. Yeah.
It's just...
They will call it MagSafe, won't they?
Disaster. Disaster.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like they're doing it right.
I wished I bought one, just to be clear. Like, as in, if I wasn't on my big, I'm going to save money and not buy an Apple Vision Pro kick, I would have bought an Apple Vision Pro.
For the videos or for the product?
For the product. Like, I think it's so cool. Like, you know, and I'm not inspired to buy a Meta Quest 3 or whatever. Like, I'm purely inspired by it because it's an Apple product. Like, I really think it'll be super cool. I think, like, if someone has one, I'm going to want to go and play with it for a while. And
You
know, but $3,500 is just too much to... I can't justify $3,500 just to play with something cool.
Because
it's not ready for work yet. It's not ready for, you know, it's it is literally a toy. So,
Let's see it.
It's smaller. Apparently, it's smaller in person than you think. Like, I mean, I have this idea. It's huge.
Yeah.
But it's like, apparently, it's smaller than you like, when you get it, you're like, oh, okay.
It's just a tiny little thing.
Yeah. That's but it's like 3.5 pounds.
Yeah. It's a total nugget.
Yeah.
I think the strategy is a little bit about killer feature, a little bit about work readiness. Because you know, as with the Mac always has been, start with designers, very high premium brand point, and then trickle down over time, and it's work that pays for it and other companies that pay for it. I think you'll get, with the right work kind of output, I think it's going to be very, very neatly done that way.
One use case I saw from the Wall Street Journal who tested it, she took it and took it up the mountains. Do you see this one? She went skiing.
I was going to talk about the other one, which is my favorite of all. What's the mountain one? Tell me the mountain one.
I think she took it skiing because she said, these look like ski goggles. I'm going to rent a cabin in the woods and wear it for 24 hours.
Smart.
So she did that. But the use case that was, I actually thought, like, you have to remember she's wearing stupid VR goggles, you know, they're not VR goggles, but they are, while she's doing this. But she's cooking. She's cooking. Yeah. It's her and her producer and her writer are there. But she's there and she's got the thing on her head. Pass-through is perfect. Yeah. She's chopping onions. She's like, great, chopping onions doesn't hurt my eyes because it's a full seal around my head. This is great. But the use case that I actually thought was great, where it's like, if it was
VR. Don't say it. Don't say it.
Timers.
Don't say the timers. Don't say timers.
You take a timer, you put it over one pot, and you say, this is the rice pot, and it's 20 minutes. And then she's got this other thing, the sauce, and it's 3 minutes.
Oh, God.
And she's like this doing her thing, and she looks over, and there's two different timers over different pots suspended.
That's the death knell, mate.
No.
That's the death knell.
But I was like, okay.
It's over.
But that's one of the features. And it's one of the ones I was like, that's a good feature.
It's
over. That would be handy if I could just glance over and see a timer.
Time of death, 9/19, Wednesday, 31st of January, 2024.
Why do you think it's over? Because of timers.
Because I was involved in Google Assistant, and the number one use case in all home audio products were timers and media. And getting the timer to stop took 2.5 years. And any time anyone talked about timer being the premium, the kind of go-to killer feature, that and alarm clocks, the thing
that
is doomed. The thing is doomed. So I saw it and everyone was like, thank God we were $3,500 and the world's 15 years worth of premium $3 trillion company R&D into timers.
They were really good though. You pinch them like this in midair, you drag them and they, you're out. I thought it was a good use case.
It's cute. I'll tell you what I enjoyed. I enjoyed that they gave it to not just the YouTubers who do tech, but they gave it to
boomers,
like mumsy dadsy boomers, and said, dear reporter, go do what you do. And they did like great humanizing things with it.
Yeah.
At the same time, I saw a video of, you know, kids at a skate park with a Quest 3 with an augmented Tony Hawk as they go.
Yeah.
Like, that
so
works
they've,
too.
They've changed the game. They mapped it to the skate park, and you're able to play Tony Hawk while wearing a Vision Pro headset.
While wearing a Quest 3 headset. Yeah.
Actually, skateboarding, though. Super cool. Cool.
I mean,
did you send
about
me that actually? You sent me that.
I don't know, probably. I sent you a lot of things. You know, with the Google Glass and everyone getting punched in the face, and now the deluge, we've talked about this, the Gen Z deluge of, we can put some ski goggles on and do VR in public because we're all past that. Yeah. I think that inflection is well and truly done. The practicality of it notwithstanding, but you're going to see people with these things on in planes. You're going to see them more
on bar.
You're going to see them on bar. You're going to see them on plane. You're going to see them in cafes. You're going to maybe not walking and skating, but definitely in stationary outdoor environments. No doubt. And there's going to
How do you feel about that?
Fine. What's the difference? What's the difference between holding
a phone?
How do
you feel about some people walking on BART with headsets on, a group of people headsets on? I mean, my initial reaction is that's cool. That's the future, isn't it? People can walk around with headsets on.
Yeah.
But it's also very sad, isn't it?
Super sad. I think in a social environment, if you've got like a whole group of people that are doing it, that's a disaster. I think if you're at a cafe, you're locked in your laptop anyway.
Yeah.
You're kind of,
you're
feel like
you're already your noise-canceling headphones on because you don't want to hear people.
You've already created a bubble. You've already created a well and truly created a bubble.
Yeah.
I think what I'm seeing is this kind of, there's a religious war. It's always hard to infer intent, kind of agendas of folks that they're slinging kind of ideas. But there's definitely a category of product which is just extracting the spatial computing part from the vision kind of vision, capital V, small v. And just leaning on that, like the XR Air glasses, all the ones, the AR glasses we've talked about, and the kind of keyboardless or just the keyboard augmented kind of story where for $350 or, you know, $200, you can just get the spatial computing component. And you're seeing a lot of those folks kind of come in and, you know, drive as much anti-sentiment of the Vision Pro and trying to lean them towards the, no, it's glasses and spatial computing.
It's amazing the agendas that you see come out here, right?
It's business, business on the line, right?
It is. Yeah. Yeah. A lot of it's got to be funded by Meta.
You'd think.
Wouldn't you?
You'd think. I mean, you'd think. The irony, of course, is that, you know, as you said, Meta has a lot to recover from, and yet they've leaned heavily on the umbrella brand to Oculus. It used to be just Oculus Rift, now it's MetaQuest, right?
Yeah.
Like
they've
removed the Oculus brand and leaned on their umbrella. And we're saying Apple is the second anyone gets a chance, they're going to like run and, you know, take a stab and you know, unleash themselves from Apple. It's a funny world to be in.
It's
where,
weird. I wonder. Do you think you see something in the future for Google on this?
They've had four attempts at it.
Yeah, I know,
it was there. Surely Google will jump into it. So probably with a partnership, like an OEM partnership with HTC or something. Or, you know, they'll kind of. Surely. Either with the glasses.
Is this an
or
arms race? Like, I'm just wondering. Is this like
every platform?
Is
can
Meta
be
the new Android and Apple is the new Apple? Like, I'm just wondering. Like, is this the next thing, or is it is AI the frontier, and this is all kind of secondary?
Every platform is a potential arms race, right? Every platform has a chance to lock in.
Yeah.
Right? It's an OS, it's an ecosystem.
I'm still less excited about this than AI. I still feel like that this is less.
Linear.
It feels like, are we going to be talking about augmented reality in 3 months?
Yeah, I think what's going to happen is you're going to be talking about it for years. The question is penetrated it is.
In terms of acceleration, are we going to see this? Are we going to see exponential innovation, because it's hardware driven?
No, it's very hard to see exponential. I think that's right. It's been going for many years, and maybe there's more money, maybe there's more interest, maybe there's more people, and therefore there'll be acceleration, but it won't be it's physics in the end, and so I think there's definitely limits.
Do they just become like MacBooks, necessary but not exciting? Like, I'm just wondering, I wonder what the cycle is on this, you know?
Yeah, I think, or like iPhones, like all of them, you're going to see a reversion to some sort of a platonic ideal, and they cap out and it'll become incremental at some point. I think that's right. But cycle's just starting. It's not ending.
Yeah.
Right? Like even in the last year and a half, 2 years, you've seen these things shrink and pass-throughs and optics.
It's good it's not the metaverse, though. I like Apple is not talking about the metaverse.
They went for the extreme opposite, didn't they? Zuck, to his credit, when he got to the Quest Pro, he pivoted to work.
Yeah.
And then, remember, when he talked about it and said, don't pitch me VR and talk about work. I'm out. Get the hell out of here. Don't talk about going back to the office. And yet here we are going, give me some more Windows, Apple.
If it's going to be real, it's got to have some product. I mean, I think the price dictates that. If you're going to charge $3,500, it's got to work well work context.
Totally.
Like, who's buying that for themselves, you know?
Totally.
Yeah. Okay.
The only other tangent, obviously, of this last little while is the first human implant of Neuralink.
Segway, Neuralink. Yeah, Neuralink. If you can't wear it on your face, what's the segue?
Shove it in your brain.
Put it in your head. Quadriplegic.
Yeah.
The results are promising. What was the quote? It was like additional nodes have been confirmed or something.
They're getting electrical response. Doesn't mean the guy's walking yet. For what it's worth, and for context, there's a lot of neural implants commercial in the market for many years, maybe decades, that resolve all sorts of things, from depression to kind of Alzheimer's to address to some level of like limb, you know, tremors and so on.
Yeah.
Not quite someone who can't walk to be able to walk again. So it's certainly a lofty goal, but this vertical has existed for a long time. From Boston Scientific to Medtronic, they've had kind of things in this space. So it'll be interesting to see where they're
Elon
innovating.
Elon came up with it, didn't he?
That's right.
Yeah.
He's certainly going to look like it, because he's making it seem like a mass consumer, and he's angling into AI, and he's out of the gate. He started with a wireless charge, wireless system, doesn't require anything on the outside, which is great. That's where everyone else has been headed.
Even today, he said, you know, people said, oh, this is great for a quadriplegic in terms of potentially being able to control robotics for their limbs or you know, repair. And he said, yeah, but maybe more interestingly, it's about how you can control anything with your mind.
For everyone. And of course, controlling your phone.
It's like the very first implant in the very first person, and Elon is talking about
pitching.
You'll no longer need to, you'll just think something and then it'll happen. Why it's worth extra money.
For what it's worth, one of my childhood stories was in Cyberpunk and Kevin Warwick, kind of the Cyberpunk era when I was a kid, and Kevin Warwick, who is the original kind of cybernetics professor out of the university and one of the universities in Northampton in the UK. And I really loved that. I really believed in augmenting humans, particularly like memory chips and being able to download, almost Matrix style download, you know, onto chips in the back of your... And,
or upload yourself to the...
I really used to love that stuff, just purely from a... It makes sense to have augmentation and to kind of go along for the go along for the ride, right? And as an AI super intelligence defense, the idea that, don't let them be the separate thing. If you can have super intelligence, make sure it's augmenting you so you're along for the ride.
It makes a lot of sense. But I'm also a million miles away from implanting something in my brain.
Like, really?
Well, yeah. Having seen cycles, as in, I probably would have had a mini disc in my head if that, you know, given the technologies that I went all in on, I had a mini disc player in my car and in it's like that. I would have had a Gen 1,
thing.
It's like we'd be pulling that thing out and then being like, we not probably should have held off. Yeah.
I haven't actually looked into the surgical procedure. How far does it in the mastoid? Do they have to carve out bone to have a place so it sits neatly and it's flush and stuff?
They cut a penny. They cut a quarter size hole in your head is what they do.
Yeah. You've got to get to the skull is the trick.
Cut the skull.
Sorry, you've got to get into the brain to be able to do the stem. But I'm wondering where the actual implant sits.
Apparently your skull is thick, super thick.
You've got space to carve things out.
Listening to Elon, he was talking about how thick your skull is. The implant sits in your head within the thickness of your skull. Yeah. So
he's also doing a great. Again, he's stacking all the technology things that everyone's been trying to do, robotic surgery at the same time.
Yeah.
So doing it so it's fully wireless and there's nothing external.
That's been around as well. Did Elon come up with that as well? I mean, I feel like he's just getting.
No, he's just stacking all the stuff that's been around in the first gen and kind of going for it. And I think in the case of reusable rockets, it's the thing that makes the step change in an industry. Yeah. Same with robotic implant, the safety and precision and repeatability of if you can get robotic surgery.
Can I tell you something else Elon came up with this week?
Go on.
Oh, moderation. Moderation.
Twitter.
He's going to hire 6% of the 1,500 content moderators he fired. He's going to hire apparently 6% of them back.
I missed this altogether.
He came up with content moderators. Oh, it's amazing. What a headline. He intends, for the town, because he believes so strongly in free speech and the town square, he's going to be hiring content moderators that guy, having told an advertiser he doesn't need advertise, having fired the entire company, told advertisers he doesn't, he hopes they don't advertise, and then now is like, yeah, maybe we need some moderators just because the advertise. You know, maybe we do need advertising. Yeah, we probably do. It's our business model. So, I don't know. He's messed that one up, hasn't he?
To his credit, and his algorithm requires you to step over the line. When it breaks, then you start putting things back in. If nothing breaks and you haven't gone far enough, is his mental model. So, this is very consistent.
My username. Is that next on the list? Let users change their username, because that's frustrating. Yeah, go on.
That sounds like
it's annoying. I can't change my username to one of the options that they give when you put your username in. It's like that one's taken. What about one of these? Can I have that one then? No.
And
thanks, Elon.
You're still on the service, are you?
No, actually, I rarely go on it. Oh. From someone who used to go morning and evening, first thing I'd look at, last thing I'd look at. All of this news about the Vision Pro, actually, all of that I've got through YouTube or straight through Google News. So yeah, I don't actually go on X anymore. I actually only go on X when I want to post something, but I don't do it to get news.
You still need to go on to post something, though. For some reason, you still want to change your username, is my point. For whatever reason, you still want to go there and change it.
Because I have a YouTube channel and I feel like I should, but it's not because I want to be on X. I prefer other platforms. I really do. Yeah. And I was fully bought in. I was all in. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, there you go.
Last right one on, user in your face,
just,
Elon.
Just that $8 goes begging. all right, anything exciting for the week coming up?
Trying to finish the mortgage for the house. That's on the list. We'd hopefully try and close it, but that's it. I'm looking for, yeah, it's just going to be, we're busy, busy. Calls from 8 to 8 today. So busy,
oh,
busy.
Dude. Oh, dude.
Yeah.
And then
no,
this one.
It is what it is.
Additional.
And then straight on with a mate. Ah, this
imagine,
is good.
Imagine
this is good.
If it was 3D Avatar in a VR, but that would be
wouldn't
just
wouldn't that be good
so
with someone
sweeter.
That's like kind of blurred and
slightly
and melted.
Just translucent, like you've already had a couple of pints.
Yeah.
Can we just a shout out to a small event that no one knows is going on? The Super Bowl is happening on Sunday, in case you're wondering.
She had no idea. Apparently San Francisco played
the 49ers
last night.
Are in it.
I had,
yeah,
no,
I had
idea.
No idea until I looked today. Didn't either.
You?
We don't
like,
do sports.
Yeah, what a thing is what is it, hockey? I have no idea.
We don't do sports. We don't
I,
do sports.
I don't care. I really don't care. Anyway,
don't do
well done. Go Super Bowl.
Go Bowl.
I actually care more about the ad at halftime just to find out who it is.
Yeah.
We like who's got the money to pay $8 million or $10 million.
What's the current wave? And any money, it's going to be an AI wave.
It was all crypto last year, and then before that, it was So
and it's like the Fortune, the rich list of the Fortune, whatever it is Forbes rich list. It is essentially the people who are going to be indicted for fraud. Are the people who are spending money the ones who are going to go
it's
bankrupt?
It's going to be all AI this year, isn't it?
Right,
but it's
going
to be which AI? Like, is it going to be, is Sam Altman going to have something up there? Or is it going to be
imagine
is it Microsoft?
OpenAI is putting up, what is OpenAI doing spending in the Super Bowl? That would be ridiculous. That would be.
They've got endless cash.
Yeah, but what are you doing advertising, consumer advertising? That's not a thing.
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't shock me if ChatGPT was some advert from ChatGPT. It wouldn't surprise me.
That's worse than time as being the main use case on the Vision Pro. If that's what's going to happen, we're in a world of pain. Just putting it out there, we're in a world of pain.
Oh man, how bad do I hope it's ChatGPT now? I want that so bad. And I want them not only that. I want them to be advertising timers integrated with AI. That's what I want. How you can use ChatGPT to set as many timers as you want.
And just easily stop them. I think that's the key thing. AI will automatically stop it when it just knows you've heard it. It's going to be incredible.
I've got a suggestion. Why don't you lash this episode up? Label it episode 303.
Yeah.
303.
Beautiful.
And then we can put 2 and 1 up afterwards and totally confuse our audience. How about that?
That's the plan. That was my plan all along. In fact, I was going to go to end of Q1 and then we'll do it. Hey, we're now end of January. Happy New Year one last time. Next time, let's do predictions for the rest of the year. Let's
do it. February ahead predictions. Of schedule. February.
Yeah, well, predictions for the year in February.
Yeah, but I think all of our predictions from last year are still valid. Rivian going under. There's a few of them that we nearly got right.
You can re-up. You can re-up and double down. But I think we need some new ones. Keep it fresh for the audience.
Keep it fresh.
Some percentage of new predictions.
Timers.
Now we've sunk into. We've kind of eased into January.
Yeah.
Just entire ecosystems around. We've eased in. We understand January now. We're getting a feel for the year. We've got a little bit of flavor for it. Now let's tell it how it is.
I'm ready. Okay, let's do it next week.
All right.
Great chatting, pal.
Chat soon.
Bye-bye.